Let's have a word of prayer. Kind Heavenly Father, we ask you this morning as we come to you that you will send your Holy Spirit to us so that we can receive a blessing from this service and the Sabbath day, and we leave here refreshed in your name. In Jesus' name, amen. Good morning again. Thank you, Judy, for stepping in for me. I ask, what is the most prevalent thing that you think of when you hear about the end times? What do you think of in your mind? Chaos? I'm sorry? Fear? Do we also think of the mark of the beast? Or the Sunday law? Or even the upcoming persecution? But there's more, I say, to the end times than these things I've just mentioned. Some subtle signs that sometimes we don't even think of or don't even take, I won't say for granted, but some of the things that it just kind of goes over our head a little bit. As Judy read a minute ago, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The Greek word for iniquity means wickedness or unrighteousness. And the Greek word for wax means cold, to chill or evaporate. In other words, the more wickedness we see in the world, the more it increases, the more love for each other decreases. The FBI has reported that major crimes decreased in 2017 over 2016. Even though those crimes, the number of crimes in their statistics decreased, let's look at 2018. I would venture to say that most statistics will show some bad news for 2018. Let's take hate crimes, crimes against minorities. We have so many today that we now have an additional category called a hate crime. If a crime is committed against a minority, a person, or a group, it can be classified as a hate crime, and the punishment is then a federal crime. How many of us remember in Kentucky, a few weeks ago, the guy came up, and this guy came up outside of a business, a store, and just point blank shot two black people. I just read yesterday that they have now classified that crime as a hate crime. The massacre in the synagogue in Philadelphia, they classified that as a hate crime. Hate crimes are prevalent. But you can sit here and you can say that but we've had hate crimes forever. Look at Cain and Abel. How Cain killed his brother because he hated him, basically. God wouldn't accept Cain's sacrifice, but he accepted Abel's, and so that turned Cain against Abel, and he killed him. That's a hate crime. How about Jacob and Esau? While that turned out fairly well, as far as the story goes, there was still the hate there. And how many people realize that Satan worked with the Jews so hard that they caused the hate in their hearts to crucify Jesus? Jesus basically was a hate crime. And the apostles were killed because the people hated what they were the word that they were spreading and doing. The martyrs during the Inquisitions, it's estimated that 30,000 to 300,000 were persecuted, tortured, and killed during the Spanish Inquisition alone. That's just the Spanish Inquisition. They were having people all over Europe being martyred because they took a stand for Christ. Most of those people were burned at the stake. I remember, a number of years, Jeannie and I were house parents at a children's home down in Florida, in Tampa. And we were required to fix dinners, or actually lunches, for the kids in our cabin, cottage, what the cook sent over for us to fix. And one meal was pork chops. Now, I don't eat pork. I like pork chops, but I don't eat it. But I was fixing it for the kids. And I had this pan of hot grease laying there, getting ready to put the pork chops in. I made the mistake, instead of sliding that pork chop in, I dropped it in. And I can still see the scars on my fingers from the grease coming up. The first thing I grabbed was a towel, and I wrapped it around my fingers. And when I took the towel away, my skin came with it. It hurt like crazy. And I can't imagine these martyrs going up, and saying, you can do whatever you want to with me. And they were burned at the stake. Could we endure what they had to for their love of God? Even in our modern history, how many of you, probably none of us remember Lizzie Borden, because we aren't old enough. I'm not going to point out people. But Lizzie Borden hated her father and stepmother so much that she butchered them to death with an axe. There was a guy a few years ago that made national headlines. His name was Henry Lee Lucas. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he died in Texas prison over in Huntsville a few years ago. He grew up in Virginia. His mother was a prostitute. She made Henry watch as she was servicing her clients, and she even cross-dressed him. Finally, after he could take it no longer, he moved to a little town called Tecumseh, Michigan, and he was moved there, wanted to be with his sister. But his mother followed him where she tried to get him to go back to Virginia with her. He argued with her and then stabbed her in the neck. The only thing he told the police after he was arrested was, "I remember that I had my knife in my hand." But he was sentenced to prison, served 10 years, was released because of prison overcrowding, and then he made his way down here to Texas, where he admitted to hundreds of murders, which could never be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, but he admitted to that, and that's how he made the national headlines. That's how he, here's this guy that says, I killed my mother, and I killed this other woman, that's what I was arrested for, but I also killed 100, over 100 other people, mostly women, because he had been, because of how he grew up and his hate for his mother. Crime in the early 60s, this is when this took place, about 61. Crime in the early 60s was unheard of in the small town of Tecumseh, let alone murder. In one night, two crimes were committed that had never happened before in that city. After Lucas killed his mother, he broke into a repair garage shop, stole a car, and was heading back to Virginia. He was arrested in Ohio before on the murder warrant before he could get any farther than that. Everyone sitting here, every adult sitting here, probably remembers James Byrd Jr. was dragged to death on June 17th, 1998, after he was chained to the back of a pickup. In California a few years ago, a gunman entered a classroom at a local college. I don't remember the college or all of the facts of the case, just one fact stands out in my mind. The gunman went methodically from one student to the other, and he asked each student if they were a Christian. Every one of them said no. When he got to this girl, he asked her the same question, and not knowing whether she was going to live or die, she said yes. He shot her point blank. What really stands out in my mind on that incident was that the girl, the young woman, was a Seventh-day Adventist. I'm asking you, if someone comes to you with a gun and holds it to your head, what would your answer be? I'll tell you, I don't know what my answer would be. But it may happen one of these days. We may have to answer a question like that one of these days. The FBI recently released a report on the number of crimes classified as hate. Now, this isn't the crime that I talked about earlier. This is a hate crime. Hate crimes were up more than 17% in 2017 over 2016. There's been an increase in hate crimes every year for the past 3 years. And then we go to the mass shootings. A mass shooting is classified as when you have more than four victims. I have no idea why they chose the number four. I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, anything more than two is a mass shooting. But, you know, they classify it anything more than four. According to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive, 307 mass shootings have occurred in the U.S. this year. Let's think about that. 307? That's almost one a day. In fact, the Thousand Oaks shooting here a couple weeks ago, where this guy walked into this bar where a bunch of college students were partying, was almost to the day of being 1 year. So at that time, when that gunman walked into that bar, that was almost 307 for the year. 328 people have died. 1,251 people have been injured. So we ask, what's happening? Why all of these things have occurred all of a sudden? Why are we hearing all of this, these mass shootings, these hate crimes? There's two or three things that I can put my finger to. One of them, the change in the world over the years and the decades could be influencing these major changes. My father was a police officer in the late 40s, all of 50 and early 60s. His duty belt consisted of a service revolver with a, you know, that held six bullets, a pair of handcuffs, and a nightstick, better known as a billy club. That was all. That was all he needed to carry while he was on duty. While he was on duty, he never shot his gun once, and he never had it had it out of his holster one time while on duty. I think you know where I'm going with this. Police officers' duty belt today consists of a 9mm semi-automatic handgun with a fully loaded clip some of them carrying up to 17 bullets, two extra clips in case he shoots the gun enough where he has to reload it, at least one pair of handcuffs, and most of the time two pair, a stun gun, a pepper spray, and an asp, which is a foldable billy club, and the radio. So, and how many times have we heard where an officer has taken his gun out? Almost every time he gets out of his patrol car, he takes that gun out to be sure that he isn't going to be shot. Oh, and then there's the bulletproof vest. In the 50s and 60s, bulletproof vests were unheard of. That's one reason why, where we can see the change in the crime rate and the mass shootings, the hate crimes, the equipment that our police officers have to deal with now. In the 50s, 60s, they never had SWAT teams. But let's talk about how the electronic and newspaper media influence our lives. Here's a few examples. When I was in college, my class was given some statistical data. A survey taken showed that the majority of Americans thought murder was the number one violent crime committed. Now, I was in college in the 80s, and so this was prior to the 80s that this was taken. A survey taken showed that the majority of Americans thought murder was the number one violent crime committed. But in fact, statistics showed that it was at the bottom of the list. In other words, newspapers and television reporting are partly to blame for our outlook on life. The media knows that the more sensational the story is, the more readers will buy their newspapers and viewers will tune in. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram's motto is, if it bleeds, it reads. So they go for the sensationalism. When I worked at the radio station up in Keene, occasionally I would send a news feed to the Associated Press. And if that news feed was about an accident, the first thing they would tell me or they would ask me was someone killed? And normally they would usually take the news feed, but if there had been a death on the accident, that would be the top of the story. If it was maybe, you know, some serious injuries or something like that, they would knock it down to maybe the third or fourth story in the newscast that they would present. How many of us remember the wedding of Luke and Laura? Ooh, I got some people up here that just admitted that they watch soap operas. Luke and Laura was this famous couple back in the 90s that they were on General Hospital. They were supposed to be marrying, and the buildup was so great that on the day of the episode in which they were married, 30 million people tuned in to that episode. This is the daytime. People are supposed to be working. They're supposed to be doing other stuff in the daytime instead of watching General Hospital. 30 million people. a lot of those people were women, and they dressed up in wedding dresses to watch the show. So you tell me that television doesn't influence people. When I worked at the newspaper over in Vidor, I reported some stuff from the sheriff's department. A detective once told me that he was talking to a victim of a robbery, and she couldn't understand why it was taking so long to solve the crime. She said, "They do it on TV in an hour, why can't you?" And she was serious. You know, like it or not, we are influenced by television and sometimes newspapers. They're called the gatekeepers. Want to know why they're called the gatekeepers? Because they tell you what you're going to read and write. Or listen to, and what you're going to read and listen to. They make the choices of what goes in their publications. How about the technology that we have today? How many remember the touch tone phones? Some of you. Y'all have just told how old you are. Before the touch tone phones, and I'm telling you, now I'm telling you how old I am. Say what? Well, see, and this is what I'm getting at. Before it was the rotaries. I should ask you how many remember the rotaries, because those were even before the touch tones. But how many of you remember having to go through an operator to make your phone call? Uh-oh. I don't even know, Carolyn, I didn't even know that you would admit to that, because that's been a long time ago. And I tell you what, that operator, she was a hero of the town, of all the gossip ladies in the town, because she knew everything that went on in that town. You know, if she plugged that switchboard into something that she knew was from someone who loved to gossip, she listened and listened and listened. She knew everything. But after going through the operator, we went to the dial phone, and then we went to the touch phone. I was in hog's heaven when I got a private line on my phone. You know, instead of having to share that telephone with three or four people, I could pick that thing up anytime I wanted to and not have to worry about someone else being on the line, and I'd have to go back, or not worry about someone coming back on me. And there was this one time, this one woman on my party line, she was drunk as a skunk when she came on. I couldn't get her off, so I just finally had to end the conversation I was having. My point here is that we have gained many strides in the electronic media. You know, we don't have to make long distance calls anymore. We don't have to worry about going through operators anymore. Although some of those electronic things that you get now where you have to push buttons and all that sometimes can be exasperating. But sometimes it's scary knowing that we have all of this new stuff. Do you realize, I realized the other day, I don't know if you all have or not, as you're driving down the road, you have your GPS on, and it's telling you exactly where you're at. That's scary. All they have to do is bounce a signal off a satellite, and they can tell you exactly where you're at. Ask yourself, how could that be used when trying to flee authorities after refusing to receive the mark of the beast? I don't know how you could. So here's a couple examples of how the electronic media can influence people's thinking. October 30th, 1938, and no, I don't remember that. I studied this in college, had to do a little bit of research. Orson Welles broadcast an adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel, War of the Worlds. Now, I'm seeing some heads bob up and down. Are you bobbing this up because of firsthand knowledge, or? The broadcast caused a panic when listeners thought that Martians had landed in New Jersey. They ran from their homes in panic. Some even committed suicide. Wells had made the broadcast appear to be real. It started out with some big band music, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever listened to old radio program tapes. You know, I've got some at the house where I can, you know, the big bands and shows from the old radio era. It started out with some big band music, played for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden Orson Welles comes in and says, basically, the Martians have landed. And they made that show so real, like I said, that people were panicking all over the country. Everyone was listening to the CBS network, CBS radio network. People were panicking. You know, instead of going to another network to see what they were saying about it, they stayed with CBS. And the next day, well, that night, the switchboards at CBS and the police department lit up. I mean, people were calling in like crazy. The operators couldn't get into, or couldn't get enough time to answer all the calls that were coming in. Wells nearly lost his career over that. And some of the people, after they found out that it was just a hoax, wanted to tar and feather him and run him out of town on a rail. They were not very happy. The police weren't happy with him. People weren't happy with him. That's one way that the media can influence our thinking. I once saw a photo of a man standing beside a computer that was taken in the 1950s. And that computer would fill up one of our Sabbath school classrooms down here. It was so old, it was so big. But the cut line behind the little paragraph below the photo said, basically, this is what a home computer will look like in the future. You know, they thought that this huge computer that would fill up our classroom would look like in our homes in the future. Did they really miss their mark on that one? I'm not going to ask a show of hands, but I'd venture that probably 95 to 100% people here in this room today either have a computer in their pocket, purse, or hand. And, you know, you don't think of a telephone as a computer. But, you know, if you can get on the internet with it, it's a computer. My thought today is that we must not let the electronic age influence our behavior or our thinking. My cable service has, I think, about 600 cable channels on it. And out of those 600, there's probably maybe 4 or 5 that are decent watching. There's channels there that I don't care that they're there, but I have to take them because I want those 4 or 5. And some people have even more than that. You know, they have these big, these man caves with huge television sets in them, and these easy chairs that you can sit back and watch, and a wet bar over in the corner, and you know, and they every Sunday, they're in there from 10 o'clock until 10 o'clock watching football games. They have no inkling of what they could be doing besides watching all those football games. We must remember that Satan is using everything he can to keep us from God and our relationship with him. He's also going after our family values. 41% of first marriages end in divorce. Now, the good thing about that is that a few years ago, more than 50% of the first marriages ended in divorce. So it's gone down a little bit. But still, it should be down to zero. 60% of second marriages end in divorce. And 73% of third marriages end in divorce. I think that television sitcoms may have a little bit of a part in that statistic. I learned in college that the Nelsons and the Cleavers influenced people's thinking on how a family life should be. The Nelsons and Cleavers never argued. Their kids were the best behaved, never fought, shared their bedrooms without arguing. How many of us today have kids that never argue, share their bedrooms without arguing, and we never fight with our spouse? During that time when a parent looked at his or her children fighting, they thought, why can't they be like Beef and Wally or the Nelson brothers? Or better yet, why do we have to fight all the time when those people on television never do? Satan has also brought the thinking into people's mind that it's better to use electronics as babysitters. I don't know if you know it or not, but Jeannie and I take care of a couple boys 3 times a week. The first thing they ask when they walk in the door is, can we watch cartoons? If we let them, they're fine. But here's the key. If we don't turn the television on, they have toys over there. They spend the 2 hours that they're with us every night, each night playing with those toys. So, one of the boys, he sleeps. But anyway, it doesn't matter whether they have the TV on or not. They're still, you know, if they have the toys, they play with the toys. And here's the one that I somewhat strongly disagree with. Satan has also convinced people that it's better not to use punishment to punish our kids for something they did wrong. This goes directly against the counsel from the Bible. Proverbs 23:13-14 says, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from hell. Okay, that kind of sounds harsh, you know, beating a child with the rod. But the Hebrew word for beat is naka. It means to strike. So, you know, you can strike a child and still beat him, according to Solomon. As you know, that Jeannie and I, for the last year, took some adoptive parenting classes, and one of the subjects in that class was corporate punishment. We learned that corporal punishment today is non-existent, that the state will not allow a person to spank their child, basically. If they do, they can be turned over to CPS, and the child can be taken away from them. My parents never believed in withholding the rod. We had plenty of rods in our house. It was called a weeping willow tree. Now, some of those rods would ranged in size from maybe about half the size of your little pinky finger. And the largest ones were big enough that would make you think twice about doing the wrong you had just done then. After that punishment was handed down, I would sit there nursing the sting on my backside, thinking it would be great to live in the Cleaver's house where they never got spanked. Yeah. But my dad, it didn't believe in taking you to the den and talking it out. If you did something wrong, you're in trouble. My mother never used the phrase. I never once remembered her using the frame, "Wait until your dad gets home." She could hand it out just as well as my dad could, and my mother was half the size my dad was. I remember she was quite a bit smaller than I was. And even in high school, she would make me get over the kitchen chair, lean under it, and grab the legs on the opposite side for her to spank me. And I was teasing her about her size one time and about how she had to get over the chair and grab the legs and everything to spank me. My mother was good at quick comebacks. She says, "Yeah, but you're afraid to get over that chair though, aren't you?" I had to think a minute, and she was right. You know, I was afraid. Satan has got us so worked up, some people, that he even uses abuse to destroy the family life. The CPS is overflowing with kids who they have removed from their homes because of some sort of abuse. I look at my grandkids, and Elvis isn't here today, his granddaughter, and Phil's kids, and Yaslin and Byron's little kids, and all that we have here today. And I think, how can anyone hurt these little kids? But it happens. It happens all the time. So much so that CPS caseworkers are overloaded with their work. The courts are overloaded with cases. We would have to go to court over in the year that we had Camellia and Cameron, we would have to go to court every few months. And we would sit out in the hallway waiting to get into the family court because it was so overcrowded. And I'm sitting here thinking, how can this be? Matthew 10:21 states, "And the brother shall deliver up the brother to death, and the father the child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death." Almost daily we hear parents starving their children. Almost daily we hear brother against brother, and one of them dies over a silly argument. A boy recently strangled his grandmother because she argued over his because they argued over his grades. Another boy shot his grandmother, then killed himself over her request that he clean up his home. We must not let these predictions found in Matthew get by without seriously taking them into account, that our world is getting worse and worse every day. We can think about the Sunday law, we can think about persecution, we can think about the mark of the beast, but Jesus is telling us some things that we need to know other than those other end time events. I know that I've been standing here talking for the last, I don't know, longer than I normally do, about all this doom and gloom stuff, but I want to tell you there is hope. We can look at the condition of the world and use it for positive influence in our lives, or we can simply sweep them under the rug and forget about them. Jesus is coming soon. We can't wait until the Sunday law is passed or persecution starts or we have the choice of accepting or rejecting the mark of the beast. We must get ready now. We must accept some of those signs that Jesus told us about and are coming to pass even before our eyes. Mark 13:13, "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." 1 Corinthians 13:7 says, "Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things." There is good news in all this chaos. By accepting Christ, living for him and drawing so close to him on a daily basis so that Satan can't have an influence in our lives, we will endure unto the end. I'd like us to take our Bibles and turn to Psalm chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 9 and 10. And this is basically, it's a promise that we can endure all of the things that are going to be coming, that's coming upon us. Chapter 9, verse 9 says, "The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you." Do we know Jesus today? Do we know the Lord? That's the only way that we're going to be able to endure the end time.